Welcome, everyone, to Lighting the Void. I am your host, Joe Roop, and we had a series of unfortunate events, actually a small unfortunate event during this show, so you're actually hearing me do a recording for you. Usually you'll just pick up the live recording from me, but anyways, let me just clean this up a little bit. So if you can find our website at lightingthevoid.com, that's L-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, lightingthevoid, V-O-I-D.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at lightingthevoid and facebook.com/lightingthevoid. Now, since I'm pre-recording the beginning of this show, the reason why is because we had a server failure towards the beginning of the show. It only hit the network, but wasn't on Spreaker. And then in about a minute into it, I finally got the Spreaker feed going. So, and that's usually where I pull the podcast from. So there you go with that. And so I had the episode about a minute in and explained it. But it's kind of weird the way I'm doing this. And I would just say what Daniel said for the first like 30 seconds or a minute, but I don't want to do him any injustice about what he's trying to explain. So a friend of the networks and a friend in the Salt Miners community sent me the file of the recording where he was listening to it. So for the first minute, you're going to hear his point of view like you're listening to it from a radio. And then I'm going to split the audio, and then you'll hear the rest of it as the actual interview. So all that means is the first, like, 30 seconds to a minute, it's going to sound, you're going to hear the show from the person that was listening to the show's point of view, and then it will go into the regular audio clip. So here we go.
A bit about Daniel. We welcome him back. He is author of Swimming with a Whale. And to me, he is the true definition of a truth seeker, a student of Daskalos and brother of the light. This teaching, again, I've always said and still say it to this day, is a diamond in the rough. He is not only an author, but a direct student of the famous mystic and healer, Dr. Skilionis of Tessalus, better known as Daskalos, who taught circles of students techniques and hidden methods that can be traced back at least 2,000 years. Now, Daniel will be taking calls, but I believe he wants to talk a little bit about a couple of things. And Daniel, it's really awesome to have you back. How are you doing this evening?
Good, Joe. How are you? Hello, everyone.
I'm great, except for the little technological failures we've been having. Other than that, I've been doing great. It's good to hear your voice again, man.
Yeah. It's good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know tonight you were going to talk about a subject that I believe I would definitely can't wait to hear about, because we all struggle with it. You hear it a lot. What's the true definition of the inner and outer self? How do we tell the difference?
Well, I'm going to get into that, but before I do, I'd kind of like to just step back and just take a quick overview about what we're really doing and what the teachings of the researchers of truth are.
Sure.
The teachings are really offer a system by which each one of us can use to approach and experience the truth directly. This is a system and not some organization you join. So in this system, rather than a hierarchy of teachers and gurus, what you're going to find are loving brother and sister guides to help you along your way. And these guides, they never stand between you and God. Instead, they stand at your side. And they, as you make your own steps on this great, great journey of awakening, and no one person, of course, or system can claim exclusivity to the truth. The truth belongs to all of us, and all of us belong to the truth. And there are no prohibitions in researching the truth, which means that we're free to learn from other spiritual systems. And because it's knowing by, you know, I mean, we all have this experience, so it's, we know that we really learn by comparison. And by comparison, we learn to draw closer and closer to the real truth. And by real truth, I mean the truth undistorted by illusion, freed from judgmental prejudice and suffocating dogmas. So initially, as a researcher of truth, we learn to work within ourselves to restore and maintain the health of our material body. We work to calm our emotional distresses and to clear our mental confusion. We work to cleanse and harmonize ourselves emotionally and mentally. That's what that means. This restores balance and purifies our personality, producing a happier, more satisfying life.
And by balancing ourselves, we are then better able to help those around us. But the real aim in our system is self-realization. And by self-realization, we don't just mean realizing the present-day personality, our so-called outer self, and its constantly changing expressions. And those expressions, I mean, thoughts, feelings, desires, and behaviors. This is an absolute necessity to begin with, but it's not the ultimate aim. So when we talk about self-realization in the system, we mean a full and complete assimilation of our outer self with the inner self, or call it the soul self.
Right.
Now, we must be clear about this. When we speak about the assimilation of the outer and inner self, it doesn't mean we have two selves. What it means is that we are one with dual nature, an immortal, everlasting divine nature, and a human nature with its ever-changing expressions of thoughts, words, and deeds. So this is an important point to keep in mind. Another point is it is correct to say our outer personality self. It's okay to say that, outer self, our outer self. But at this point in our development, it's not correct to say our inner soul self. Why? Because until you attain full self-realization, you are speaking from the standpoint of your personality self. And for sure, the soul is not the property of the personality self. It's the other way around. So in truth, we are the soul which is expressing through a personality. And even if that personality's expression is that of a saint or sinner, it's still what's going on with every human being. So keep in mind, in this assimilation with the outer personality self, with the soul self, and what we call self-realization, we're not becoming something we weren't already. Rather, we as a personality are coming to the realization of the truth of what we were, are, and will always be, and that is a child of God. Even if the behavior of that child is disobedient and naughty, a child of God is always a child of God. Now, the inner self is one. It's perfect. It's forever free and never bound. But the outer personality self is a trinity of thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. And yet, at the core of this outer personality self, the brilliant light of the inner soul self shines. So, to try to make that just a little more, you know, meaningful, let's make an analogy here. Let's liken ourselves to a lamp with a very, very bright bulb that represents the inner light of our soul self that's covered by three lampshades. The first lampshade covering the bulb represents the body of our thoughts. The second lampshade represents the body of our emotions. And the third lampshade represents the body of our physical behaviors, which, of course, are driven by the thoughts and emotions. Now, the question is, how much of the light from that brilliant bulb of the soul can shine through these lampshades? What determines that? Well, of course, it depends on the color and transparency of the lampshades. So too, the amount of light of our soul that shines through our personality depends precisely on the color and transparency of our lampshades, which, as we said, represents the thoughts and emotions and behaviors of our personality. And so it's by cleaning and purifying the expressions of our thoughts and emotions and behaviors that we enable that light of our soul self to shine through our outer personality self to greater and greater measures. Now, in spiritual systems, people talk a lot about raising their consciousness without really defining what that means. It is exactly by cleaning the dark heaviness of the anger, judgment, jealousy, resentment, and dissatisfaction in life that we purify our lampshades of our thoughts and emotions, and thereby, raise our consciousness to higher and higher levels. And this is just absolutely a never-ending process, even for the very advanced, as we move from a kind of habitual subconsciousness to the many, many different levels of waking consciousness, to true self-consciousness, which has no levels, and eventually to the highest degree of consciousness, the self-superconsciousness. This is also known as the seventh level of consciousness. So now we come to an important distinction that many spiritual systems are confused about, and that is that the self and the consciousness. We've been describing something of the self, and we've spoken about different levels of consciousness. So now the question is, and I ask everybody, what is self-consciousness? Think for a minute. What could self-consciousness be? And why is one person's self-conscious always different from everybody else's self-consciousness? Our self-consciousness is determined by how we as a personality self use the mind. It's that simple. Our self-consciousness is due to how we are using the mind to shape and formulate our thoughts, desires, and feelings. Our self-consciousness is different from everyone's self-consciousness, as I said, which is basically saying our personality is different from everyone else's personality. And again, this is because we formulated different qualities, quantities, and combinations of thoughts, desires, and feelings, which are not exactly the same in everybody. Now, our outer personality self-awareness is within the limits of time and space, the worlds of meaning, while our inner soul self-awareness is not confined by these conceptual limits. It's beyond all these in the eternal now. It's completely outside the perception of time and space. This difference between the outer self, which is who we are, and the inner self, which is what we are, is so very, very important to notice. And like I said, many spiritual systems miss all this. They confuse it. Mm-hmm. So when we experience the dawning of the awareness of what we are, you there?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Okay, garbled up there for a second. Yeah, sorry. Garbled up there for a second.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Okay, so I just was saying that when we become aware of what we are, then we disentangle from that thing we thought we were, which is our personality, which is constantly changing. It's never stable. And in this experience, we've reached to the level of the inner self, but not as a hypothetical concept, but as a direct experience of our own divine nature. It is a divine nature that has been clothed in our personality self-awareness. Just think about that, what I'm saying now. Our divine nature is clothed in our personality self-awareness. So we have to free the two. We have to disentangle them. And as we said many times, a human being is like a line with two ends. From one end of the line to the middle represents our human nature. From that middle point to the opposite end of the line represents our divine nature. But we do not recognize that. We can't understand that truth until we touch both ends of the line. Until this is done, we are definitely not in a position to distinguish where the outer personality itself is or is not, and where the inner soul self is or is not. So this is our fundamental task as a researcher of truth, to extend ourselves up to the end of this line. Now, all that I just said is one of those kind of lessons that require really deep, deep contemplation and meditation to understand and experience directly and not just hold it in your mind as a theory. So I just want to say a little bit about that before we go into the questions. And I do have a question from a seeker here. And I'll just read it, and then you can open up the line.
Okay.
Question is, for some people, particularly those who are in traditions which use color in their meditation practices, there's an experience of color forms in their field of vision, primarily when the eyelids are closed, but also when they're open too. There are many variations, but things like transitioning, shifting, cloud-like shapes, spheres, nebulas, and also the entire field of vision, colors can be seen. And these colors could be red, blue, violet, pink. And he says, I once had a single emerald green nebula that stayed around for 3 days, which was very uncommon. So he's wanting to know what that could be. Well, it can be caused by a lot of things, but let's first take the physical retina phenomenon. If you look at a bright light with your eyes open and then close them, you can see a photographic negative after image of the light, which is just a physical phenomenon associated with how the photoreceptors in the eye work. Or if you look at a color orange for a long time and close your eyes, you'll see the opposite color green. Again, this is just a physiological phenomenon. It's not really what he's referring to. But there's a second kind of color phenomena, as he described, that can be experienced due to elementals. Now, these are the thoughts and emotion forms that we are creating thousands and thousands of them every day. We even create them while we sleep. So these elementals come from our own subconsciousness where they're stored, or they could be coming to you from the outside environment. But why do we see a color with them? Well, an elemental has a vibration, and a vibration makes a colored light, and a certain frequency of sound. So if you're clairvoyant or slightly clairvoyant, you may perceive that vibration as a color. If you're a clairaudient, you'll hear that vibration as a sound. And now the color and brightness, or the tone and harmony, will tell you something of the nature of that elemental, too. Now, another thing seeing color-like can indicate is an approach of an archangel as they work within our body. Each of the seven archangelic orders working in our body carry certain vibrations. And as I said, vibration creates sound and color. So seeing a certain color, like violet, could be the approach of the archangel Raphael. That's his color. His pulsating radiations can be perceived as violet when it touches on our etheric double. The radiation of the Archangel Raphael is much more expressive than that of the other archangels. So Raphael immediately responds when you try to approach him. But you must raise your vibration up to be able to actually perceive that. Raphael in you actually rejoices to see that you sense his vibration. They're waiting for us to make an approach. When you start to have direct contact with the archangels, they just rejoice to see us wake up to their work. Now, they've been working in our bodies all our lives without our knowing it. So they're just thrilled to see us awaken to that reality. So sometimes when Raphael touches your etheric double, you'll shiver. It's because Raphaels are the masters of our etheric doubles. So when this happens, when you start to feel that kind of approach, try to feel his love through his vibrations, because archangels are nothing but love. They don't know evil. They're only know goodness. When an archangel approaches you, you may see kind of a shape, a sphere, or a flame, and especially lightning. When an archangel tries to communicate with you, it may appear to you as the color of that archangelic order, red, bluish, or any color of lightning. So when this happens to you, you must be calm, but stay alert to receive the communication. Now, you may see this lightning in front of you. You may see it coming to you, or you may feel that you actually are entering the lightning. And it could be like a regular lightning bolt, or it could be extremely powerful. But however you see it, do not worry, because these archangels are super intelligent. They know exactly what they're doing, and they will only present it to the degree you can handle. And so anytime an archangel tries to contact you, it can feel like this. It can feel like his pulsating vibrations pass into you and vibrate on your consciousness. And when you feel this, become completely still and try to hear what he wants to say to you. But I have to say one thing. We have to put a caveat in there. You have to be advised that if you have a guilty consciousness and he touches on your aura like that, it gives him a degree of grief. This is why we must clean ourselves from guilt and shame before ever trying to contact the archangels, because we don't have the right to make our archangelic brothers feel grief. So those are a couple of things that the light thing could be, but most of the time it's the elementals. But as you practice and work in the Research of the Truth, you'll discover it will be archangels trying to contact you.
So when you say that when we feel guilt or we're beating ourselves up, we're also putting that on our archangels as well? Like they feel that as well too?
Yeah, absolutely. See, now the archangels, the ones I'm just talking about, the seven orders, they come in and they work into you, but they don't really like to attune to your personality too much, because it's not their work. Their work is in the body. But sometimes if you're trying to raise your consciousness and approach them and learn about them, they're happy to share their secrets, so they'll come forth. But if you have guilt in your consciousness and shame and just feel bad, and you know, like it when they touch you, they feel it. And not only do they feel it, it kind of makes a smell to them. Now, our guardian archangel is different. He's in constant oneness with us. So he's the only archangel that can actually stay in oneness with us. So he knows all about that. But he'll never try to make you feel guilty about anything. So if you think you hear a voice inside that's saying, you know, making you feel guilty and trying to make you feel less than a normal human being, it's not the voice of an archangel. It's another kind of voice, and you should reject it immediately.
Okay. If anybody wants to call in and ask a question, I know I had a hiccup from the start, but I told everybody in the Salt Miners it's live now and they're all listening. So please call the number to ask a question while we got time to talk to Daniel. It's 831-777-8643 if you want to call and ask a question. I know some people are going to have to listen to the recording of it, but I find that interesting because I've talked to other people and they say, you know, the whole goal is to have communion with your holy guardian angel. Now, is that true in the Doskalos teachings, or is the inner self more than just your holy guardian angel? Is it everything that you're speaking about?
The guardian angel is a separate being from our self, from our inner self.
Okay.
However, it's at one with the inner self. It's called, Daskalos called it unified, which means if you want to get a picture, it's like taking two candle flames and putting them together, and they appear as one. But they're really two. When you pull them apart, you can see they're two. So the moment God said, let us create man in our image and likeness, this archangel from the order of the Metathrones became egofied with us for all of our incarnations. It's the same guardian angel. All every incarnation and between incarnations, the guardian angel is with us and will never leave us until we return back into God realization or theosis.
Okay.
But it's two different beings. It's not one.
Right. Okay. I have a question here from Jonas. He said he would like to ask you another question. And I told him I'd ask for you. He said he asked you about faith a couple of years ago. And he said he planned on making a podcast about it. The question of many, and it has to be addressed thoroughly, or he would like it to be addressed thoroughly, I guess. He said, but he wanted to ask if you still plan on doing one and maybe could still talk about it. So I guess he's asking you if you still plan on doing a podcast. But he's always wondering what exactly is faith and why is it so powerful to move mountains like Christ said? What is the mechanism behind it and what is the relation to elementals?
Yeah, well, it's a very big subject. I do remember his request, and I did create it, but I haven't had a chance to go into the studio and record it yet. So if he hangs on a little longer, he'll hear the whole story. But just to briefly touch on it, I will say that real faith is not ordinary belief. It's not the ordinary belief at all. Because with belief, especially blind belief, you just, oh, I hope it works out. Oh, I hope this is going to happen. You have absolutely no foundation. So it comes up and it disappears just as quickly because there's nothing there to support it. So with real faith, it has to have a foundation. And what's the foundation? Well, this is your work. You have to work in your life to see what you can find for the foundation of the faith of the thing you want. For example, let's say you go through life and you make a good living and everything's going well, and all of a sudden you get the axe at work, and you try for 3 years and you can't find any work, and the next thing you know, you burnt down your savings and you're at the end of your rope, you feel like. And you try to have faith that it's going to work out okay, but you know, now doubt comes, and so now you have to work with the elementals that are trying to destroy the thing, which are doubt and fear, basically. So one might think, you look back in your life, well, gee, I lived, 40 years, and I've always had enough to eat. I've always had a place to sleep. I was always cared for. So you could actually use that, your direct experience all through your life, to believe that God is still going to care for you after you get through this ordeal, and as you go through the ordeal. Maybe that doesn't relate to everybody, but you have to look to your own life of something to base your faith on. It can't just be pie in the sky, wishful thinking kind of thing. That just doesn't cut it, and it won't work. And so Christ mentioned, if you have the faith the size of the mustard seed, I mean, that's the smallest of all things. And what did he say? If you have the faith of the mustard seed, then all things are going to be possible to you, because you use the mustard seed because it's the smallest of all seeds there is. And if you plant it in the ground, it makes a big, big, bushy-like thing, and the birds come and take refuge in there, which means that for the person who has real faith, they can become a shelter for other people. The birds mean the other people. So it's a great, great subject, and I have addressed it in detail, and I will put it on a podcast soon, Jonas.
Okay, cool. Basically, in the inner and outer self is why do we find it so hard to go into our, how do we, I know people say we just stop the distractions and meditate, but it's so easy to get caught up in everything that's going on in the world, and you lose that time to do that. Is it really you got to make it like a habitual thing to take the time to go inside yourself, don't you?
Well, certainly it's much more effective if you do it in a regular way. Regularity builds, and irregularity kind of breaks down things. So if you can set a time, the same time every day, show up at the same time, it's even more powerful. You do it in the same exact location. That's not always possible for everybody, but it certainly makes it more powerful. So you have to get the habit of meditating and doing this. And basically what happens when you try to meditate? I mean, it's the truth with everybody. When they try to meditate, their thoughts and emotions just rise up and distract them from what they're trying to do. So that tells us our first job is to learn how to silence the thoughts and emotions that arise from our subconscious mind.
Right.
If you can't do that, you can't have a good meditation. If you can't do that, you can't have a good prayer. If you can't do that, you can't be a good artist, really, of any kind, or a good worker of any kind. You have to be able to learn to silence those things and learn to concentrate. And that's why concentration is one of the golden keys, too. Nobody's successful in the material world or the spiritual world who doesn't develop concentration.
Right. Well, someone just called in from 310 area code, and they just hung up. So if you want to call the show, it's 831-777-8643. If you have a question for Daniel, please call in and ask a question while we got time. I know this man is busy. I know. By the way, what have you been up to lately? I know you said you were, seems like every time I email you, you're out of town. You're always doing something. You're really putting in the work. Are you still working on the movie?
Yeah, there's. I just came back from Mexico where we've been working with a marketing group, and we have a movie production company interested in producing the movie. And then I went back, and I went and visited my friend David and his family out in New Mexico for his graduation. Now I'm back again. I'm about to leave town again to go work on the Symbol of Life book with another fellow.
Oh, that's cool. And, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because we talk about the Kabbalah a lot of bit on here. And when I say that, I know it's to what your Symbol of Life looks like what the Kabbalists show. And I'm bringing this up again because we got quite a few listeners on the network right now. I can see them, and I know some of them are new, but the Symbol of Life is quite a bit different. Not too much different, but it's different than the Kabbalistic system a little bit, isn't it?
It's very different. But both the Kabbalistic system and our Symbol of Life have the come from the one source, and it was ancient in Egypt. You know, Moses, who created the Symbol of Life, or the Tree of Life, he based it on the Symbol of Life by the Egyptians. And when he realized that when he didn't become Pharaoh of Egypt as he had hoped, he, you know, decided to become the leader of the Jews and lead them off into freedom. And so he took the Symbol of Life teaching from the ancient Egyptian, changed it. He changed it, and he put different names of gods and goddesses in there, and he just changed it and called it the Symbol of Life. I mean, the Tree of Life. And that's the Jewish Kabbalah that is used today.
Oh, okay.
The Symbol of Life, we can trace the one we're using. We trace back to Origen, who was a second century, 200 AD, one of the first and greatest church fathers before the Roman Empire hijacked Christianity. And they were not just dignitaries of dogma. These guys had real powers. And he was using that thing, and he taught this Symbol of Life. And he made some changes in it himself based on St. John's revelation, and then presented it to his students. And he had so many schools in Alexandria, Egypt, and he had something like 6,000 scrolls he had written on these teachings. And the Romans, of course, came and they destroyed his school and scattered his students and took him and put him in jail and tortured him for 4 or 5 years till he almost died. But they didn't want to make him a martyr. They broke almost every bone in his body and then released him. And he had a couple of years left in life. And he took this Symbol of Life and gave it to the Essenes. Now, the Essenes were living in Egypt as well as in Palestine. And these guys, they were brothers to the Jews, but they weren't. They didn't believe in the vengeful God. They believed in the loving, true, merciful God as Christ taught. They didn't believe in the angry, vengeful God. So these guys took it and preserved it in this teaching of the symbol of life, passed it down to the Knights Templar. And the Knights Templar protected it with their life till the Pope destroyed all of them. And so this thing has been hidden over time. Now, Moses' use of it, all those stories in the Bible about the plagues and the parting of the seas, he did by the using this symbol of life. And if you even read, they even passed it down, I mean, not symbol of life, I said it wrong again, tree of life. It passed it down. And so Solomon, when he built the temple in Jerusalem, he talks about him using a symbol, his ring. And the symbol on his ring was the same symbol as in the center, the heart center of this tree of life. And it says in the Bible, he was able to control demons to build that massive temple. And when he was done, it says, he imprisoned them in water jars in the temple. And they stayed there for a long, long time until finally the Romans sacked the temple and released them. And then all hell broke loose and the Romans slaughtered the Jews and the Essenes because they couldn't tell the difference between them, all through the, not only in Palestine, but all through the Mesopotamia.
Okay.
So it's a very, very powerful symbol, but it's been, and there's plenty of Jewish mystics that you know its secrets, but it, as far as the Christian version, it's not been exposed until now to the general public. So it's a very, very powerful teaching and practice. And it's, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it.
I can't say a lot about it, to see that book. We got a caller here. It's 310 area code. You're on the air with Daniel Joseph.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Oh, I didn't know I'm going to be on the station. I'm sorry. I had a quick question. Hello, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. I had a question. Earlier, you were saying that, you know, when the archangel wants to connect to you and you can have no shame or fear or anything like that. But how can you get rid of the shame or like regret in our life?
Well, it depends how indoctrinated you are. The Jewish religion and the Catholic religion have really used guilt on the people. So it becomes like an elemental that just keeps beating you up in your life when you make mistakes. But that's not the point. So if you have, it depends how strong you have it, but either way, if it's strong or mild in you, the way is you have to do introspection on yourself. For example, you make a mistake, right? So look, introspect on that. What did I do? What did I do wrong? Oh, okay. But the idea is not to beat yourself up, it's to see what you could have done that was better. Something you could have said that you should have said better, or something you should never have said. This is introspection. This is self-purification. This is raising your consciousness. So when you do that, don't beat yourself up. Just resolve to not make that mistake again. And then you don't have to go through all the turmoil of feeling guilty and, you know, feeling pain over it, because it's not necessary. The only reason why it happens is for you to become aware of it. You know, sometimes it shocks us when we make mistakes, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But to beat yourself up about it is just counterproductive, and it just takes you so much longer to get forward. Because at the end of the day, you have to come back and say, okay, yes, I made that mistake, but next time I won't make that mistake. But maybe the next time you're in that situation, you'll make the mistake again, and maybe the third time. But after a few times, you'll finally master it. And that's the whole point of the teachings, to become masters of ourselves, emotionally, mentally, and physically.
Thank you.
What was your name again?
Stephanie. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Stephanie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. I've got a question that's kind of weird, but I want to ask you while I got you here. When it comes to archangels and stuff like that, and inner and outer self, what about like love? And what I mean, like the love between a man and a woman. You know, sometimes there's a lot of sadness and joy and all kinds of stuff there. I mean, do they help with that? Do they take off when they feel sadness? You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit different than just working yourself out, because now someone else is involved, you know?
Yeah, and that gets a little dicey, because what most people call love is not the kind of love we talk about with the archangels, which is absolute unselfish love. They work for us all the time. They don't even expect a thank you. They just constantly work on our behalf, maintaining and growing our material bodies. But with relationship love, most of it's love by reflection. Now, what's that mean? Well, it's like you see someone and you go, wow, I think you're great. And you start to learn them and go, wow, I really like you. I think you're great. And that person loves to hear that about themselves. And they say, well, gee, I don't think you're great. So it's like this little mutual admiration society. But what happens is when one person stops seeing the other person the way they want to be seen, then the thing starts to come apart, because it wasn't based on unselfish love. It was based on selfish love. I love you because you think I'm great. So those are the ones you have to watch out for. Not that all marriage, you know, man-woman relationships like that. It's just that those are the kind that end up giving us pain. We can say it's love, but we could say a match, the flame of a match is fire, just like the sun is. But there's a big difference between the sun and a flame from a match, just as there's a big difference between selfish love and unselfish love. Same degree of comparison. And it's really the same degree of comparison between our inner self and our outer self. Right now we're identified with the outer self, so we don't really realize how great and grand our true self really is. And when you experience it, it'll seem just like a candle flame to the sun.
Right. So all love, if it's real love, I mean, and by definition, should be unconditional. I mean, if it's really love, love is unconditional, right?
That's right. An unconditional love versus conditional love. I love you because you tell me I'm great. And that's exactly what I want to hear. So the moment you stop thinking I'm great is the moment I stop loving you. And Daskos always said, if you feel like you've fallen out of love with someone, it means you never really loved them. Unconditionally, anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up. It really is. I mean, I brought it up, but it's interesting that you say that, because I had this conversation the other night with somebody, and it's like all we've ever been taught since we were children, it seems, are conditions. I mean, even from our own parents, sometimes it feels like. So, you know, they say, well, the divorce rate is this, you know, in 70% now or something. And I think that has a lot to do with it, because we're not willing to forgive and love somebody to the full extent of what that really means, because we're so focused on, I guess, what they really do for us or something, you know?
That's exactly right. It's like a business deal.
Yeah.
And when we feel like we're not getting the enough benefit from the business deal, we want to pull out, or they want to pull out or something. And this brings up another point, marriage. What really binds two people in marriage? Is it the vows the priest or the civil servant says? Is that what binds them? No. See, we're a trinity. We have our physical side, our emotional side, and mental side. So a true marriage in our system, this is the kind Christ talked about, is a marriage of heart, mind, and body, which means that we not only must love the person, we must try to understand that person. There's a lot of relationships where they love each other, but they certainly don't understand each other. Or maybe they understand each other, but they don't love each other. So that's what really binds the people, when you have it at all three levels. That's the one we're shooting for.
Okay, great. I'm glad. Thank you for answering that for me. Liz has a question from the Salt Miners Group and wants to know, are there any humans with these type of powers that you speak about, that kind of like Daskalos had, are there any humans with these type of powers on Earth today?
Sure. Daskalos would always say, I'm not special. I've just worked to develop this. That anybody can do it, and that they have. Many, they, you know, who are the enlightened ones from the past? They knew it. They did it. So they are on Earth, but they're very, very few. Rare, and the true ones, the ones who are really connected to it, they don't necessarily, you know, want to come out. Actually, there's in this system, in the White Brotherhood, there are seven masters on the planet at any given time with these abilities. Four of them will come out. Three of them never come out to the public. So there's only a few that come out to the public of the ones that are here. And you hear about this in India. You hear about some yogi in the cave, and all he does is sit in the cave, and you think, oh, what the heck is that for? Well, he's not doing it for himself. He's doing it for humanity. You know, he's working on the planet, on the race as a whole. And they have big, deep works behind the scenes, but then there are others who will come forward and the public will know them. And they have works in the fields with the people. But yeah, they are there. And it's like he says, it's not like he's special. It's just that he has developed and worked for many lifetimes in this direction and maintained these powers.
Is it necessary?
And if you really want to...
Go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, is it necessary?
No, I was just saying that
we try to seek these masters out. You know, do we have? Okay. I don't know how to say this without sounding selfish or whatever. But Daniel, not only do I admire your journey and walk, but man, I am so jealous of you. Like, I would love to meet someone like that, like Doskalos, in my life. But is it necessary? It's not necessary that we have to do that, right?
Well, when you're ready, you'll meet one, but it's not necessary to meet them all. And here's another point. We'll go back to the angels. Deskos, I can't tell you how many times I was in class and heard him take his hand and hit the table next to him. You don't need a master. He would say it like that.
Mm.
One time he'd say, life is your master. Whatever's happening to you is your teacher because it's trying to bring out things. Maybe they're good things, and maybe there's things in you that you really need to work on. But life is doing it all the time. Plus, he says, think about this. That guardian angel has been with you from your first incarnation, in between incarnations. He's super conscious, which means he remembers and knows every thought, every feeling, everything you've ever done in any of these incarnations and in between. So who is a better master than that? And the other thing about the guardian angel is the guardian angel can tell you things that earthly masters are not allowed to tell you because he knows that he doesn't make mistakes. So he knows that when you're ready to hear this, he'll tell you. An earthly master could make a mistake, but the guardian angel cannot make mistakes. And really, if you want a master, look within. And what this guardian angel does is, you know, you can consider him your master, and he is your master in a sense of a loving guide, but he introduces you to your real inner self. Once you get introduced to your inner self, you don't need anybody else outside you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the highest thing going on anywhere. It's the highest thing. It's exactly what's going on in the master. The same thing is going on in you. It's just that we can't reach it in us so much. So we like to go on a guru hunt and find the master to help him introduce us to the master within us. That's the whole point about finding a guru or master. Now, most gurus aren't like that these days. It's very rare to find one that's really truly selfless these days. But they're out there, and even without being a master, they can be a loving brother guide, as I said at the beginning of the show. They stand with you, and they'll walk with you, hold your hand as long as you're willing to walk forward. The moment you let go, they let go. They won't pick you up and put you on their shoulders and carry you.
Wow, that's fascinating, because I had a guest on my show not too long ago, great guy, and is more of an Eastern, you know, I think he was maybe a Sikh, and would, you know, he would just tell me up and down, look, you're not going to reach these levels of travel or enlightenment or what he called inner eye travel without a master to teach you how to do these things. You know, he would swear by it, you know, but maybe it was just that master, like you said, helped him find his inner self. You know, it's just that, I don't know, it seems like we always want someone to hold our hand and teach us these things, but we're really not listening to our own experience.
That's right. We're lazy. Human beings are lazy. They want everything done. They want to go to the drive-up window and have the meal ready. They want everything made ready for them. They don't want to do the work themselves. So this idea, and this is totally an Eastern system. You can't make it across the shore to the other side without the guru. That's what they say all the time. And it's part of their culture. But Daskalos was adamant about that. You don't need that because it's within you. So yes, okay. If you're lucky enough to find a sincere master who's willing to help you introduce you to the inner self, great. But you don't need it. You can start meditating. You can start a dialogue with your guardian angel right now. He's the one that's going to really bring you home, even if you meet an advanced master. And if you read Daskalos, the Symbol of Life book, he tells you little bits. He doesn't want to reveal too much because this is an extremely powerful teaching, the Symbol of Life. And he tells you a little bit, but it's all through the book. More will be given to you by your brother instructor guide. Brother instructor guide. So people are always asking me, who is this brother instructor guide? How can I get to him? Right. I said, well, it's your guardian angel he's talking about. So we just need to start the approach. That's what we need.
Right on.
And the guardian will come forward. If you're sincere and you dedicate yourself, he'll come forward.
Okay, we got a caller from 928 area code. You're on the air with Daniel Joseph. Hello.
Hello.
I see you there. I know you can hear me. 928 area code. They probably called in and are listening to the show or something.
Okay.
I don't know, but if you speak up, I'll leave you on if you want to speak up about that. But Daniel, where do you see society now? You know, everybody's talking about the age of Aquarius and we're all waking up and all this stuff. And it's a lot of new age stuff that we're being fed. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell what's real because you're being pulled in all different directions. Is that just a part of us waking up as a society that we're just kind of working this out? Or there's a lot of fear of deception out there, too, when I talk to people on this show.
Oh, sure.
And like, well, how do you know that's not a demon telling you to do it? How do you know this? How do we know what's true when we have an interaction with any of these teachings, elementals or beings or voices or whatever you want to call them?
The proof is in the pudding. I mean, you have to experience it directly. You can believe it if somebody else. Here's what you can do. I mean, when you make this approach, you don't know in the beginning. So you have to, at some point, you have to rely on someone, a trustworthy authority, like a Daskalos, or a sincere teacher that's really trying to do the good work. You have to do that in the beginning. But it's not enough, because you have to come to your own direct experience of it. Once you have your own direct experience, you don't need somebody to say it's right or wrong for you because you've had it. You know it. I can tell you from my own direct experience. Yes, there's a guardian angel. Yes, he tries to save you. He tries to protect you. Yes, he's there to guide you. I've had all these experiences and many, many more I can't even talk about. But if someone would have told me that, then you're on belief, right?
Right.
Oh, well, I believe this guy because he told me and he was so convincing. But then the next guy comes along and he's more convincing. And he says, no, it's the other way around. So now you believe the next guy because you don't have any direct experience. It's kind of like with faith. It has to be based on something, and that basis is your own direct experience. So as far as what's happening in the world, I don't think we need a horoscope or a telescope or anything to see this world is in trouble. There's something really going on.
Sure.
There's a time of choosing. It's so clear it's a time of choosing. It's accelerating. Everything's heating up, both temperature-wise as well as vibrationally. Things happening much, much faster than they used to happen. You know, just in 7 years of our lifetime, we have gone through more changes, many more changes than our grandparents ever did in a whole lifetime. So things are speeding up. It basically, in my view, it's a time of choosing. Which camp are you in? Are you for those things that cause destruction and harm and pain? Are you for healing and bringing the light forward, bringing out the truth? So people are choosing which side and which camp they're in. That's why there's this great war. When Christ was here, he said, don't think I've come to bring peace. No, I've come to bring a sword and a division. Mm-hmm. And he said, and how I wish the world was, something world is, I've come to set the world on fire, and how I wish it was kindled now. Well, definitely it's kindled now, and it's on fire. You can see it, that fire of the Arab Spring. I mean, it's just the fundamentalist. And here's something else we should be careful of. We often say, oh, the Islamic terrorist. We shouldn't tie the religion to the terrorist. We shouldn't say Christian terrorist, Islamic terrorist. These terrorists have nothing to do with the real essence of any religion. So we should separate that in our mind. I know the media keeps hammering that into us, but it's a completely wrong concept. I just want to throw that in there.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Totally. There is, I saw a question in the salt miners thing we're coming towards. It's almost a little bit to an hour in, and I'm trying to keep Daniel here as long as I can. So I'm going to ask this question because I want to know the answer to it as well. As far as astrology goes, I know I've asked you about tarot, but does Daskalos even partake, or what is his view on astrology?
It's a slight influence on us, but it's nothing compared to the influence of our own elementals. Now, here's an example. You have a person born under one sign at the same time of the day, under the exact zodiac sign, is another fellow. And then later on in life, those planets and stars align to a point where it creates an influence on it. To one person, they may feel like, oh, I feel like painting a painting day. I feel so creative. And the other guy can just feel irritated and angry all day, because of what he's harboring in his subconsciousness, his emotions and thoughts. So it puts an influence on us, but how that plays out depends on the elementals, the thoughts and emotions we harbor and express. So that's why he didn't teach it. That's why he didn't put much emphasis on it, because he tried to get to our attention that which is causing us the most trouble and that which will create the greatest benefit in our life by learning and mastering.
All right. Whoever that caller is, if you can hear us, you go ahead. And I don't know if you're listening to the show and you're getting the delay, but we're still here if you want to talk to us. 928 area code. Another question I wanted to ask you that I actually wrote down myself is, I have a friend of mine that their father passed away, and it really hurts him. And they want to be able to talk to their father. And you hear people going into the astral realm and speaking to their, you know, their passed away relatives and stuff. And then some people call that, I guess it's necromancy. I don't know. Some people say it's evil. I mean, should we even bother with that? I mean, can we talk to people that have left us, or are they just a part of consciousness now?
No, they still continue on exactly as they did on Earth. Same feelings, same thoughts, same intentions, same interest in life, same appearance, except it gets younger once you're on the other side for a while.
Right.
Thing is, when they first pass, it's best not to try to make contact. It's best just to wish them light, wish them well, send them light, but only white light do we send to the departed, and we wish them well. But after 40 days, they get adjusted and integrated into their new environment. At that point, you can talk to them. And you're talking to them all the time. But if you want to do it much more focused, just sit down and be quiet and just have this inner dialogue with them. Now, the thing is about the departed, we feel like we've lost them, but they don't feel like they lost us. They still feel they hear us. They know what's going on in life. They can't do much because they're not masters. They don't know how to reach across the veil to help us much. And we don't know how to reach across the veil to help them much. But the thing that does reach across the veil is love. So if there is real love, and I mean real love between the people, they feel it and it benefits them. So when you wish the departed love and light, and it's like putting wind in their sails. But when you feel sad, you put a pull on them. You pull toward the earth to them, and that makes them feel uncomfortable at the least.
Yeah.
So you should never feel grief for the departed. Feel happy they're continuing on their journey, and if you have real love, you're going to see them again. Love brings people together. Disinterest and hatred repels people, and that's another important point. You know, in this world, basically it works the same way, but it's much slower and you don't see it. But in the psychic world, everything is just driven by attraction and repulsion. You go places because you think and then you're attracted to the place or the person, and you don't go to the places you don't want to go, and you don't go to the people you don't want to see. Here on Earth, it's all mixed up. We're walking down the street with a killer or a saint, and they would be right in the same crowd. But over there, it's not like that. You sort of find the place that you're in harmony with, so you don't have that kind of mixing. Now, a person in a higher plane can come down to a lower plane and visit people, but a person on a lower plane can't go to the higher planes. So it works like that.
That's very interesting.
But yeah, never really hold grief for them. And I know we miss them and everything, but it's hard on them. And if we really love them, we do not want to make it hard on them. We want to make it better on them. So we want to wish them light and love and God bless you, you know, go on your journey. Now, hey, over there, they're free compared to us here. They don't have to work for a living. If they're reached a high enough level of psychical plane, they don't eat. They don't need to eat. They don't need to, you know, pay a car payment, nothing like that. Life is so much better over there. In fact, back in the early 1900s, they used to refer to it as Summerland. I always liked that term. It was like summer vacation when you were a kid. It just felt so much freer than the wintertime when you had to go to school. It's like that. You're just freer. And you're freer to pursue your interests. For example, let's say you're a housewife and you were married and you really wanted to be devoted to your husband and kids. And so you were a good housewife. You took care of the house, you cooked and cleaned for them, and you did all those things. But really down inside, you wanted to be a dancer. Well, now all that's gone and they're off pursuing their interests as being a dancer, the things they wanted to do but couldn't do on earth. So it's really it's a glorious, glorious place. I had a teacher. I'll finish with this story. I had a teacher who in New York City, named Hilda, and she was clairvoyant, so she was able to see the departed, because sometimes they don't pass over to the planes right away. They hang around on earth. And she met this guy, and he had a story where he died, and they came and got his body, and they took him to the morgue and laid there, and he woke up in the morgue and got up and walked outside, and he decided he wanted a cup of coffee. And so he went into a diner and he asked for a cup of coffee, and nobody paid attention to him. And he raised his voice and asked louder, and nobody was paying attention to him. It freaked him out. And then he decided, well, I need to go back to where I was laying down. And so he went back. He went back to the morgue. It took him some time to find the morgue. He went back to the morgue, and he was actually woke up in his psychical body. So he's walking around on earth in his psychical body, and people couldn't see him. So he jumps back in his body, and, you know, and then the next thing, he wakes up in his material body again, and he wrote a book about it. He went on tour, and there was many things else in the story, but he said it like this. He said, I'd fallen asleep on earth, and I woke up in the land of glory. So just being in the psychical body, you are completely, compared to being on earth, you are so free. I think Christ described it as like, you'll jump around like a newborn lamb, you know, how they jump and jump for joy.
Yeah.
That's how people are on the other side once they come to it. Now, if you carry a bunch of guilt and karma with you, you know, it's not going to be like that, because you're going to be in your shell. And everybody awakens in their shell, but it's still a lot freer than what we know on earth. It's something beautiful. They save the best for last, I guess, you know. And there is no death. As Christ said, he who dies passes from death to life, which means living on earth is as dead as it gets.
Right. It definitely feels like that sometimes with all the sorrows we have here. And I'm really taking into heart what you've said to us, Daniel. And I apologize about the rough start in the beginning. I know it took up some of our time. And, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and talking to us. And you have to know that, as well as myself and others in the salt miner community, are constantly studying these lessons, and that we are listening to what you're saying, and that what you are doing is at the very least helping the earth in such a way that really can't be explained yet. And I just want to thank you, man, for all you've done and all you're doing.
It's my pleasure. I'm very happy to be a part of all this.
Is there anything that you want to say to the audience before we get out of here? Any parting words?
No, just, blessings to everyone, and go and live the life you really, really want, because it's really up to us to claim it and say it. So say it how you want it to be. Make it good. Make it worthwhile. Make it a life worth living.
Right on. Well, thanks for coming out. I can't wait to do
okay.
It again. That was Daniel Joseph, guys, student of Daskalos and teacher of Researchers of Truth, author of Swimming with the Whale. And up next, we're going to have the next show. We're going to have Dan Lopez from Spiritual Warrior Today. We're going to take an interlude, and we will start the next show. We're doing a doubleheader tonight. And again, thanks, Daniel, for coming out. All right, guys, stick around.